You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
In a world filled with cigars, craft beer, comics, movies, and video games,
only two men are brave enough to search out all things nerdy.
It's the Cigar Nerds Podcast!
And welcome to the Cigar Nerds Podcast. I'm your host, Smokin' Joe.
And I'm Brad Jackson.
What's going Flame on, people?
Brad Jackson.
Damn it.
And I'm Norm, sitting in.
Yeah, we've got another one in the nerd cave this week. So, with no further ado, light 'em if you got 'em. What are you smoking this week, Brad?
The Muat.
Which stands for
My Uzi Weighs a Ton.
Appropriate cigar for the movie we're going to be talking about today.
I believe so. I don't know.
Yeah, the 1988 Dirty Harry movie Deadpool, right?
Yep.
Love me some Dirty Harry.
I mean, we weren't talking about some other Deadpool, right? Because I took a whole bunch of notes on Dirty Harry. If I'm wrong, I'm going to have to pause and go look up some stuff.
No, fuck it, dude. We'll do the same thing we always do. We'll just pull a show out of our ass.
No, actually, we're going to be talking about Deadpool. But before we get into that, we're talking about the Muat.
Yes. Yeah, this is...
I left my Muat in the taxi.
Damn it. I had a whole duffel bag.
I'm just stuck with a Cohiba today.
But this is from Drew Estate's Subculture Studios. Has a San Andreas Negro wrapper, Ecuadorian Connecticut shade binder, and hearty Brazilian Matafina filler, coupled with Nicaraguan fillers.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm just now getting into the cigar. This is my first My Uzi Weighs a Ton cigar. I've seen them on shelves.
They finally shortened the name because that was like a long name to stick on a
But it kind of looked pretty cool. I don't know. I mean, I would like to see more than just words as from a branding standpoint, but I don't know.
Yeah, they should have boxes shaped like ammo containers or something, yeah.
I feel like that may be taken, but I mean, that can certainly be a thing. But I mean, as far as the construction goes, no complaints. Nice wrapper, nice color, good fragrance. I don't know. Right now, I'm going to say that this cigar is a little bit mild. For my full body taste, I'm definitely going to say this is a medium at best. So I don't know. I'm curious to see what happens once I progress into the second and final third. But as for right now, getting some earthy tone notes out of it, little bit of a wood flavor. Not super complex, but enough to keep the cigar interesting.
Yeah, and I kind of like the story behind it, too. This blend came up from one of the Drew Estate's Cigar Safari tours. It was a blend someone came up with because part of that trip is, blending your own cigars. And it was a blend that was so popular that he decided to make it a production model. And these are some, if you're one of those guys that like small cigars, this is not the cigar for you because they only come in like a 60 ring gauge.
Yeah, I think
you get 5, 6, and 7 inch ring gauge, 60, and then they've just released a couple small ones. The one they call them bait fish, which is a 4x44, and a night crawler, which is a 4.5x50. But yeah, the original three are just 5, 6, and 7, all 60 ring gauges. So yeah, if you don't like big cigars, you probably want to go pick something else. Luckily, we like big cigars.
This is not for the Lancero smoker.
Yeah. I like big cigars, and I cannot lie.
I don't know, man. The couple of Lanceros I've had, I don't know. It was an interesting change of pace. The skinny, long construction, it still ended up taking about an hour to smoke, so it was enjoyable. Had a little bit of time to sit down and relax. So I'm not going to necessarily knock the Lancero.
It's definitely a different take, interesting flavor.
But this is like the completely opposite end of the spectrum.
Yes.
And with that, we will get into the main topic here in a minute. Be right back.
Stay tuned.
You're probably thinking, this was a superhero movie, but that guy in the suit just turned that other guy into a fucking kebab. Surprise. This is a different kind of superhero story.
X gon' give it to ya. Fuck, wait for you to get it on your own. X gon' deliver to ya. Knock, knock, open up the door, it's real. With the non-stop, my problem's stainless steel. Go hard, getting busy with it. But I got such a good heart that I make a motherfucker wonder if you did it. Damn right, and I'll do it again. Cause yeah, I am life, so I got to win. Break bread with the enemy. No matter how many cats I break bread with, I break who you send to me. You motherfuckers never wanted nothing but your life. Save, bitch, and that's on a light day. I'm getting down, like a nigga said, freeze. I won't be the one ending up on his knees, bitch, please. If the only thing you can't steal was came out to play, stay out my way, motherfucker. First we gonna rock, then we gonna roll, then we let it pop, don't let it go. X gon' give it to ya, he gon' give it to ya. X gon' give it to ya, he gon' give it to ya. First we gonna rock, then we gonna roll, then we let it pop, don't let it go. X gon' give it to ya, he gon'
Welcome back to the podcast.
It's like I got voices in my head or some shit.
Oh yeah, we're here again to talk about the Merc with the Mouth, the only one who talks more shit than we do, Deadpool.
I just gotta ask, what is a Deadpool?
Well, it's a pool full of dead. Actually, it's a...
Is it a kiddie pool or a full-size in-ground?
Probably full-size. I mean, you can stack a lot of bodies in a full-size pool.
I hear regeneration's a part of that pool, too.
Yeah, Deadpool is a...
There can be only one.
Hold on, that's Marvel a comic movie that started back in 1991.
Taking it to the way back, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So, let's kind of go... Where did you first come across Deadpool? Because I know you're not a big comic book reader, so like where did your Deadpool obsession come from before we had this badass movie we're going to talk about here in a little bit?
I mean, I got it more from, I kind of missed the comic book craze earlier on, but I definitely caught on to the graphic novels that were kind of the post comics, if you will. And then from there, I kind of went out of order and then went back and got into the comics and was like, all right. Now I got my bases covered. So stop hating, motherfucker.
Because it's... I don't know, it's... what about you, Norm? Where did you learn about the pool?
I do take it back all the way. It was probably about 92, 93 when I was still in high school. Yes, I just aged myself right there.
Yeah, Deadpool started... in 91, in issue 98 of The New Mutants, created by Rob Liefeld and Fabian Nicieza, or however you pronounce his name. And basically, he was... basically, Rob said that, you know, he kind of wanted to draw Spider-Man and Wolverine, but those jobs are already taken, so he had to make his own Spider-Man and Wolverine.
In the same character.
Pretty much, because, you know, back in the day, Spider-Man actually made a lot of jokes and shit, so, you know, Deadpool was kind of his, you know, answer to that. Plus, Deadpool got his powers from Wolverine. He was part of the Weapon X program, and they basically tried to infuse him with Wolverine's healing factors, but it kind of just made him a big mess and drove him insane. But he's, you know, basically immortal at this point, so, there's an upside to anything.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't know. I mean, it was always the whole dynamic. I mean, I love the whole breaking of the fourth wall. You didn't see that. I don't know. I mean, you had Who Framed Roger Rabbit a little bit that
I mean,
kind of did that. But that was really a big thing that you just did not see and, you know, have this character interacting with the reader.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to talk breaking the fourth wall, I mean, the only other movie I can remember doing that was like OG Ferris Bueller's Day Off back in the 80s, which, you know, Deadpool movie, they make a big reference to that too. So I thought that was kind of funny.
Definitely got to pay homage.
Paying homage there. But yeah, Deadpool did get his, you know, he started off as a villain and kind of a, just kind of like a guest role here and there with, you know, Cable and some other people. But eventually he got his own comic in 1997. By Joe Kelly and Ed McGinnis, And that's actually kind of where a lot of the stuff we know as the modern Deadpool began. That's where the breaking the fourth wall started, was in that series. That's where we got Blind Al, Hydra Bob, Weasel, and people that we will later be in the movie we're going to talk about. So that's pretty much the, you know, the 97 series is what, you know, kind of like the rules of Deadpool was began.
Are there rules when it comes to Deadpool?
Be insane, and you can't die.
Lots of guns and explosives, yeah. And excessively violent.
But never has like anywhere to put all those guns. That's one of the things. Like basically, Deadpool's pouches are freaking magical because he can pull out bazookas out of nowhere. That
I don't know. Could there be a Deadpool shows up in the DC universe just to meet up with Alfred so he can get hooked up with some sweet gadgets?
Last thing, Deadpool probably could, because if he's anybody the only could. Comic book character that knows he's in a comic book. He's completely self-aware. And no one, everyone else just thinks he's crazy, but he's like...
No, you know, universe is.
Yeah, he's like, you know, talking to the audience, and everyone else is like, who the fuck are you talking to, Deadpool?
Yeah, I think, those guys.
Yeah, I mean, and also, he later on teamed up with his old buddy Cable that he started, you know, fighting with in the whole Cable and Deadpool series in, I believe it was 2004, which kind of, that was kind of a buddy cop action movie of a comic book with Deadpool and Cable.
Yeah, I mean, I'll say that's about the time that, you know, I really started getting into Deadpool. I mean, that was kind of my high school years. So, you know, I was a little bit behind you guys, so I was late to the bandwagon, but, you know, I saw the light.
As long as you made it there.
Yeah, that's what's important, right? Yeah, I think some of us are late bloomers.
Yeah, pretty much the first. I mean, I didn't find Deadpool till around 2008 with the reboot that kind of tied in with the Secret Invasion storyline. Because a buddy, I had, you know, read comic books in high school, and then I kind of got out of it until the first Iron Man movie. And a buddy of mine had opened his own comic book store, and I went in there and like, I'm gonna check out comics. You know, the comics are popular again. He's like, dude, you should try this Deadpool. I'm like, what's cool about this? He's like, dude, he's kind of a asshole. Like, you would like him. And sure enough, I mean, like, the dude's got multiple voices in his head. He's, like, talking. He's having, like, full-on delusions and kicking everybody's ass while he's making freaking jokes and, like, old, like, 80s and 90s jokes. I mean, I was like, this is the hero for the modern age.
Yeah, I mean, that was one of the things when I got into comics that I always looked for. Like, you know, I wasn't necessarily just about superheroes. Like, I really gravitated more to the graphic novels, and, you know, I was looking for more the dark humor or the ultra-violent. I mean, that just kind of what appealed to me.
That's one of the things, I don't understand it why, because even before this movie, Deadpool was huge. And it's, you know, the merchandise, you know, t-shirts, whatever. For someone who's not had a lot of non-comic book exposure, you know, it's not like Batman and Superman that we've had movies since, yeah, you know.
Got it, since ever.
Yeah. But I think what it is, you know, when you talk about Batman, Superman, even Captain America and Iron Man, those, you know, characters go back to the, you know, in the case of Superman, either the 20s or 30s, and Cap, like, in the 30s and 40s.
Yep, you got World War II going on and so, everything. So I feel like people are looking for a hero, looking for a role model.
Well, that's the thing.
And,
you know, Deadpool came out in the 90s when most of us were kids. And so it's kind of, he was kind of like our generation's superhero. You know, like, you know, all the Batman, all those are your grandfather's superheroes. They've been around since before you were born. But this guy, you know, came out when we were all teenagers and... Yeah, it's pretty much kind of stuck with
kicking
everybody.
Ass and taking names.
Exactly.
Like, I want to live that lifestyle too.
Oh, and it's funny. Do you know how he got his name, Wade Wilson?
How?
No.
When Rob Liefeld made the character, he showed it to, you know, his Nick or yeah, Fabian, and he's like, "Dude, that looks like Slade Wilson from freaking Teen Titans. It's Deathstroke." So he named him Wade Wilson, kind of as a joke that he looked so much like Slade Wilson.
That's pretty funny. I mean, I knew about, you know, some of the Teen Titan tie-ins and stuff like that just from research and as I got bigger into the comics and wanted to learn a little bit more about the origin. But I haven't dove into it that far, I don't guess. That's kind of cool.
The things you'll find on Wikipedia.
Can you cite another source?
Like most of my college papers, no. Yeah, I mean, he's had so many like cool comics. There's one, it's Deadpool Merc with a Mouth. I think it came out in 2009, where basically he is traveling through different dimensions and picks up a sidekick. The sidekick is his severed head from the Marvel Zombies series. So through the whole series, he's teaming up with him, carrying around his own zombified severed head. It is the weirdest freaking concept for a comic book.
I mean, but that's one of the beauties, is it's always worked. Like, no matter how over the top it may seem, it's always worked for Deadpool. And
that's the thing, a lot of the writers has been like, Deadpool is awesome because we can do anything. There's no rules when you're writing for Deadpool. It's just like, yeah, whatever.
There's one rule.
Do whatever you want.
No green suit.
Yeah, and not animated. Oh.
And don't sew his mouth closed.
And then they came out with the Deadpool team-up series, where it's just like him with different teams up with different superheroes. And even that was weird, because they started at issue 899 and counted backward as the series went on. And then I believe came out of that was the Deadpool Corps, which was him with a whole bunch of alternate dimension Deadpools. There was Headpool.
One of us.
Dogpool, Lady Deadpool.
So essentially Dragon Con.
Yeah, Kidpool, pretty much. Yeah, the horde of Deadpools you see at Dragon Con, that was pretty much like the comic book.
I don't know. I'm waiting to see a badass steampunk Deadpool.
Oh, you better get to sewing. We've only got a month for Symposium.
I'm sure it's going to happen.
Tell you, man, you just get the mask, you put a mustache on it, wear a top hat, you're steampunk Deadpool.
I'm too out of shape to be Deadpool.
Believe me, you just look at the people at Dragon Con, you're not too out of shape to be Deadpool. I could be a Deadpool. I mean, that's the thing, there's no rules with Deadpool.
You missed rule number one. There are no rules when it comes to Deadpool.
See, I've already fucked it up and I haven't even started.
Oh. Like I say, one of my favorite comic book runs of Deadpool was Deadpool Kills the Marvel Universe. It's probably one of the darkest iterations of Deadpool, which ended up spawning into a trilogy they called the Killology, I believe, because it started off with Deadpool Kills the Marvel Universe, where basically the X-Men try to send him to a psychiatrist that turns out to be a supervillain who wants to brainwash Deadpool, and he ends up killing off the voices in his head. Well, the voices in his head were blocking out a darker voice that was like, we're all pawns of this fictional world, and the only way to save everyone is to kill them. And he kills everyone in the Marvel Universe. And then eventually comes into the real world, kills the writers, and then is like, looks at the reader and is like, you're next. You know?
That's quite interesting. I don't know. I've read bits and pieces, but not the continuation all the way through. So.
Yeah, I've not seen the other, but basically then there's Deadpool Kills Deadpool, where basically the Deadpool from that comic starts traveling to all these other different worlds trying to kill off all the other versions of Deadpool. And then there's eventually like the Deadpool from our supposed universe, the original Deadpool has to hunt down and kill the Deadpool that's killing all the other Deadpools. It gets just bizarre. He kills Headpool by putting him in a microwave and nuking him like a freaking gremlin.
Definitely appropriate. Definitely.
And then more recently, we got 2010, we got a reboot with Brian Posehn, which is the kind of cool to have an actual comedian writing for Deadpool.
But jokes.
Yeah, but the only thing was when he took over, he eliminated the whole Deadpool having voices in his head thing. Because I always liked those little extra, you know, word blocks that were, you know, kind of, you know, him arguing with himself. That I always thought was a kind of a cool concept.
Just like, I can definitely relate. That's the whole reason I started a podcast.
Yeah.
I can say other people are listening, but it's really me.
I talk to myself anyway. I might as well record it.
Yeah, I don't know, man. Such a dynamic character. And, like, I guess it's just the whole, there really are no rules, and that's what makes it fun. Like, most comics, and you know, they strive to be too serious a lot of times, or they play too much on, you know, politics, or, you know, there's all kinds of hidden opinions. But Deadpool is just there to be Deadpool. Like, I don't give a fuck about your opinion. I'm just going to be an asshole. And I'm going to be fun doing it.
And then I'm going to kill you.
Yeah. Oh, it was one of the things, it was funny as shit in the, that like original, like 2008 or 2009 series that I read was, there's like one point Norman Osborn puts out a hit on Deadpool because Deadpool keeps trying to kill him because he end up ripping him off and stealing a whole bunch of money from him. So he hires other assassins to take out Deadpool. And there's this whole like running thing where he's like just constantly trying to kill him, and nobody can kill him. But just the point, it gets to the point where he's like, and it's whatever Bullseye. He's like, I'm rich. It's easier just to pay Deadpool the freaking money that he's owed, so I don't have to keep dealing with this asshole. So finally, he's like, here's the money Osborn owes you. Just hide out for a little while. Just pretend you're dead. Just leave me the fuck alone. Here's your money. So Deadpool goes off and buys a pirate ship and tries to become a pirate. It's like the weirdest thing. Well, first I think he buys a nuclear sub and realizes he doesn't know how to, control it and crash it. So then he buys like a regular old school pirate ship and tries to become a pirate with Hydra Bob as his sidekick. It's
yeah, but he would be his own mutiny.
So what about some of the other iterations of Deadpool outside of comics before we get into the movies?
I don't know. I mean, one of the, I guess not too far into the past was, the Deadpool game that got released by High Moon Studios with the PS3 and the Xbox 360 at the time. I thoroughly enjoyed that game. That game got a lot of mixed reviews and a lot of hate. But
it wasn't
the
hardest game in the world, but the story of it. I've seen people, if you go on YouTube, there's a guy who took like all the cutscenes and edited them together and made like an hour movie using game footage. And it's freaking awesome. I mean, it's exactly what you would think an animated Deadpool movie would be.
Yeah, I mean, that was the thing. Like, I don't know. I mean, you know, I think it just goes to show you, like, the game had, I think, a lot more potential, had some of the writers and stuff like that that the developers had brought in, had they not have lost their funding, and then the fucking political brouhaha over, well, you only have rights to this character and not this lineup of characters. Like, I feel like the game could have been so much more, but I think with the Deadpool movie, we will probably get a much more updated and more badass version of the game.
With the popularity it has now, like it could definitely get a next gen version. I loved it because there was so much self referential stuff. You know, it had the voices in the head, him breaking the fourth wall, talking to the player. Especially if you kept dying at a certain part, it would start making fun of you if you died too many times.
Yes,
and all those parts where the game went from like, yeah, next gen to 8-bit graphics because he had too many explosions and ran out of money, and it was like old Legend of Zelda until he like sent the studio more money to complete the game.
I mean, and those dynamics were fun, and they did a re-release for the PS4 and the Xbox One back in July of 2015 or November of 2015.
Also, I haven't seen the updated
version. But all it is the same game. They didn't, revamp the graphics or do anything different. But I don't know. I feel like it was fun, especially because it wasn't the, standard shitty X-Men version of Deadpool that we all despise, that we were really hoping with the latest film that we weren't going to get.
Let's talk about that for a second. The cock tease of having Deadpool in a movie. Many people were so angry about freaking Wolverine Origins?
First of all, Wolverine Origins isn't a good movie in the first place.
No, not really.
It really isn't. And second of all, they had the casting right, but they didn't really do anything with the character.
The scenes of him as Wade Wilson was good. Yeah, that's how you imagine Wade Wilson to be.
Exactly.
But then they turn him into Baraka from freaking Mortal Kombat. I'm like, that was not Deadpool.
And now Baraka's not even in Mortal Kombat. What the fuck?
And I've seen interviews with Ryan, and he's like, yeah, that wasn't my choice. That wasn't Hugh Jackman's choice. That was the studio. They're like, you can either be in the movie or not, but this is how the movie's going to be. Yeah, I mean, and he's like, guys, that's going to piss off a lot of people. just so y'all know. And it did. There was so much backlash. I think I've seen it once. I've never seen that movie again.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the thing. Like, you know, they even went back and, you know, when they were doing the pilot footage, you know, just to get a test reaction from audiences, like, the negativity and the fans being pissed off were so much that they tried to go in and rewrite and redoctor to save face, but it was too late at that point. Like, yeah. I think this is a prime example of, you know, studios put up the funding and let the actors and the actresses do what they're best at, that have a passion, and let those characters come to life, you will have a much greater product.
Let the writers write.
Yeah. I mean,
the actors act and let them do their thing instead of scratching your head and thinking, how am I going to make this best for everybody? And then nobody wants to watch it.
Be true to your source material. I mean, after this, I really quit watching Fox hero movies because they fucked up the story in every single one, but then they finally started coming around with the, you know, X-Men First Class and Days of Future Past. So I was like, yeah. And then the of course, as we know, Deadpool the movie, the good Deadpool the movie. But what about, you know, he's made several appearances in animated stuff. That's like, up until this point, that's the closest we've had to Deadpool being on a screen. He was in the Wolverine versus Hulk animated movie as part of the X-Force, which was basically the bad guys, them trying to capture Wolverine and Hulk and brainwash him into joining the team. But it was Deadpool. He was like crazy as shit the whole thing. And probably one of my favorite is the Ultimate Spider-Man cartoon series, because probably the closest we've had to a Deadpool is the Spider-Man from that thing, because he breaks the fourth wall. He has fantasy segments. He makes jokes. I mean, it's Deadpool without the blood and vulgarity. And then they eventually had an episode where Deadpool was on it. And it was so good because him and Spider-Man are having dueling fantasy sequences. It's funny. Yeah, I mean,
it was awesome. And that's kind of bad to say. Like, you took out all the grit that made Deadpool Deadpool, and it was awesome. Like, I don't know. I'm glad with this latest movie that... I
mean, yeah, it still had the comedy. It just didn't have the blood and guts. And even Wolverine. I mean, Wolverine probably needs to be an R-rated movie. I mean, it doesn't have to be, you know, the language, but Wolverine needs to have some blood and guts. I mean, we've seen all these movies of him slicing and dicing, but you never see him actually killing anybody.
I mean, the guy's got razor sharp claws on his hands. You'd figure someone would get cut eventually.
Yeah, you see him like slice and people fall down, but you never see, like, you know, the damage done or blood splatter or anything else.
Well, I don't know. I think up until, you know, this resurgence of, you know, superhero and comic book-esque movies.
Helen, don't get me started on the Fantastic Four.
Oh, please, don't even get started on any horrible version of that.
I don't think there can be a good version. I think people just need to stay the fuck away from it. Like, and it doesn't really have that great of a following. I mean, I can tell you The Thing. That's about the only Fantastic Four character I've got there.
What, the Human Torch?
I mean, maybe
Mr. Fantastic.
The Invisible Woman, Sue Storm.
I don't know.
That was a great choice of names, by the way.
Yeah.
That was real creative.
Just wasn't my cup of tea, guys. Not my cup of tea.
Because
Although I did love Doctor Doom.
Yeah. And maybe that's why...
A budget Iron Man, I mean.
We finally started getting good movies is because they took things so far in the wrong direction that they realized, guys, we've got to start doing the Marvel thing because no one wants to see our movies. They're fucking crap.
Well, I mean, part of my problem, and we've talked about this before too, is, you know, I see the propensity for certain films and they look good, But the fucking trailers give the entire story arc away, so there's no incentive for me to fork over $14-15 at the movie theater to go and see it, because I'm like, well, shit, I've already got the shit figured out, so I'll just wait for Blu-ray.
Pretty much.
I mean, that's an ongoing trend with pretty much every movie out right now. It's rare that you'll see a movie trailer and not know the entire movie beforehand.
But, the Deadpool trailer, it did a good job of that. We knew we were going to get Deadpool, we knew we were going to get some crazy violence, but we didn't know what the whole story of the movie was from those trailers.
No,
it gave us what you wanted to see, and then left you hanging for the rest, which excited me. So let's talk about so far 2016's biggest movie.
I mean, and
a love story.
Yes.
Released on Valentine's Day weekend.
And I don't know. It was crazy to me, like the
and actually a pretty good love story too.
It really was.
Your crazy goes with my crazy.
We could be crazy in unison.
Yeah. Where were you hiding that ring?
Don't get me started.
But
I mean, I will say that, in talking with people, there were people that I know and, told me, I've never read a comic in my life. I've never been into any kind of nerd or geek culture, but I am damn excited to see this film. Like, this was a film that had people from all walks of,
Yeah, I've had several people see the trailers, think it's funny, and be like, what's Deadpool?
Yeah.
And trying to explain Deadpool and make it make sense is not an easy thing to do. I'm like, he's a mercenary that can't be killed, and he's crazy. That's about all you need to know.
There, you did. Good job. That's pretty much it.
No, I was like, it's if a comedian had superpowers, that's...
No, but after this movie came out, everybody I talked to said, this is a great movie. And it was, I haven't talked to anybody yet that has said that they didn't like this movie.
No, I mean, and it's... I would say it is the greatest comic movie we've had so far.
I will say that, this is probably a great homage to the fans of Deadpool.
This truly is a fan-made movie. Yeah, this is like a big-budget fan film. Because, it was 10 years in the making. I mean, Ryan Reynolds has tried to get this thing done since, the horrible Wolverine movie. And eventually, a couple of years ago, some test footage they had actually made got leaked. Accidentally,
yeah.
If you can't see my air quotes, and the outpouring of it was just huge. I mean, Fox was just overrun with hate mail and tweets and everything else about we want this fucking movie. To the point where they're like, all right, fine, here, take the money, go do your thing.
I mean, literally, this movie was in development since 2004 with New Line Cinemas, and then they gave it over to Fox, but. We're talking about 12 years from development to actually seeing something on the screen. That's a long time.
Yes.
And most movies, if they were sitting on it that long, would never see the light of day.
No, they'd be buried in a closet somewhere. No.
It's really a testament Reynolds to the actor, Reynolds, everyone involved with the movie.
And I can't imagine anyone else playing that character.
Oh, no. That's him.
He was born to play Deadpool. Literally, there's a line in a Deadpool comic where someone asks him what he looked like, and he's like, I look like Ryan Reynolds crossed with a Sharpay. And this came out before Ryan Reynolds was ever even mentioned as possibly playing that character. It was like, fate. In fact, I heard Ryan Reynolds say, somebody told him, dude, you should be Wade Wilson. It was back when they were, doing Blade Trinity. And he's like, what's this Deadpool? I'm like, dude, you got to read it. And that was one of the first issues he picked up, and he's like, is somebody fucking with me? He's like, is this a joke? Because it's destiny.
I think that's one of the things that made the film great is because they poked fun at a lot of that origin, throughout the film, and then a lot of the other culture references that it got.
A toy version of the bad version of Deadpool in there, and even in the opening segment, it's like the opening credits. There's nobody's names are actually in the credits. It's just like made by God's perfect idiot. I forgot what they called the director, a useless tool or something like that.
Colossus, a big CGI motherfucker.
A hot chick. some English bad guy. if you see his wallet, there's like a picture of Ryan Reynolds as the Green Lantern in somebody's wallet, and you see like, you know, a couple copies of that whatever Sexiest Man Alive cover he did.
No, in the movie there was nothing that was safe from being made fun of.
No, they made fun of themselves. They made fun of the other Fox movie. I mean, there's like one part where Colossus is like, you know, we're taking you back to see the professor. He's like, which one, McAvoy or Stewart? And if we hadn't said it before, there's going to be spoilers. So.
Spoilers? What are those?
I think we're far enough away that it's okay.
But yeah, this, I mean, who hasn't seen this movie at this point? It's made, oh, like, I think nearly $500 million worldwide at this point. It made $137 million opening weekend.
I think this was the highest grossing rating R film to date as of right now.
Well, it's the highest R-rated opening. I mean, it's the amount of awards this thing has already won is, are not awards, but records it's already set is insane. It's like highest grossing X-Men movie, highest grossing R-rated opening, highest grossing comedy. I mean, it's done better than probably, you know, some of the Marvel movies opening weekends at this point. But the thing is now it's like, are they going to learn their lesson? Is it going to be like, all right, this movie was great and made all this money because it was true to the source material and we left freedom up to the writers? Or are they going to be like, oh no, it's R-rated. We need to make everything R-rated now. I mean, they've already announced Wolverine's going to be R-rated. So, I mean,
I don't know. I mean, you know, I feel like oftentimes that films get toned down way too much to try to appeal to all audiences. And characters as you know them don't get portrayed properly, and that takes away from a film for me, and I find that a disappointment, and that's one reason why I kind of shy away from a lot of superhero films. Yep. At times
people are finally realizing that comic books aren't made for kids. Yep. They're made for adults. We're the ones spending millions of dollars a year buying comic books, not, you know, little Timmy with his 10-year-old kid with his, you know, lunch money or whatever.
Timmy.
I don't know. I mean, it's just nice in an era that is so politically correct these days that there was nothing politically correct about this film.
No.
I mean, it was almost like if you could, you know, have a video montage to Cards Against Humanity, this would almost be it. Like, nobody is safe.
And not only Ryan Reynolds is the perfect Deadpool, but the supporting characters as well. Marina Baccarat as whatever his girlfriend's name is in the movie. I'm having a freaking brain fart at this point. But she was cool. And then there's also probably my favorite is T.J. Miller as Weasel, the owner of the bar that where all the mercenaries hang out and kind of get their missions. He is hilarious as like Deadpool's kind of best buddy. Just the jokes those two make at each other's expense is, I can't wait to see the Blu-ray release, because there's probably going to be like 6 hours of deleted scenes of those two just talking shit.
Oh yeah. Well, I don't know. I'm really looking forward to a director's cut to see what, you know, potentially didn't make it into the final release.
Oh God, if they kept it out of the final release, then I'd hate to see what they cut out.
Oh, apparently there's like tons of footage. Like Reynolds said, they could have like filmed 3 movies with all the crazy shit they did.
I don't know. I thought it was kind of funny the dynamic with Negasonic Teenage Warhead and Deadpool and the
whole. Oh yeah.
Oh, it's a gothic Sinead O'Connor.
Yes. Oh, just like, yeah, he makes Sinead O'Connor jokes. She's like, you're old. And when they go to the X-Men mansion, he's like, I live in this big mansion, but I only ever see 2 of y'all when I stop by. It's like, so you couldn't afford any more X-Men.
Exactly. Big house, 2 people.
We couldn't get the rights.
I like when he calls him his chrome-dicked friend.
Speaking of that, or, you know, when they're on the bridge and the fight scene. And
oh, yeah.
He hits Colossus in the nuts and he's like, Dad?
Oh,
I mean, there was just so many great one-liners. Well, speaking all throughout of the film,
Colossus.
This was a rendition that felt like Colossus should.
Yes, this is how Colossus was in the freaking, you know, comic books.
Yes, except they needed to use five people to make it happen.
Yeah, they had like a freaking guy doing, you know, basically the mocap on scene. There's one guy doing the voice. There's another one doing the digital. Like, literally, there's five guys to bring this to life. But
yeah, one guy doing the body movements. He's another guy doing the voice. Another guy doing the face.
Yeah.
I mean, he's Colossus, so you need a Colossus, you know, staff to...
But yeah, I mean... And so far, what little we've seen of Colossus in the other X-Men movies, he's barely used, and he's also not what I would call Colossus. I mean, but this is true to how he is in the comic books. I mean, he's this big dude, but he's like kind of a goody-two-shoes guy and like gets onto Deadpool for cussing, which I thought was funny. Like, language, Deadpool, suck my dick. That was like the greatest line. But yeah, I mean, the only other good like I said, the old, was it 90s? X-Men animated series is probably the only other thing I've seen where they've actually portrayed the X-Men as they are in the comic books. I mean, even the X-Men origins and stuff, they look cool. I mean, it's cool movies, but they're still not true to their comic book origins, where this is straight up comic books.
I mean, it was 12 years in the making. I hope they got it right.
And the fact when you finally get the battle scene with Deadpool and the two X-Men, they're playing X Gonna Give It to You. I mean, that was just the perfect song.
No, I'm sorry. My favorite scene was when he goes to the bar for the first time after he gets disfigured, yes, and he sees his old friend Weasel, and they just start going into it, digging into his appearance.
You look like a avocado had sex with an older avocado, but not love older. Sex, like angry sex. Like, that's the only thing holding the relationship. I mean, he's going and going. And then they try to come up with the name.
Captain Deadpool.
No, just Deadpool. And Blind Al. Who was a quite, you know, famous actress herself, like, you know, back in the day, but yeah, him and Blind Al is hilarious. Making a blind woman build IKEA furniture, I don't know why that's hilarious, but
it's hilarious to anybody that's actually built IKEA furniture.
I despise just the mention. I refuse to put together furniture that I can't use actual man tools to assemble. My brain does not process.
But it's got the little pictures and everything.
Leslie Uggams is as Blind Al. And
yeah, I like that when he's stroking her with his little hand.
Yes.
Yes.
Am I going crazy? Or is your hand like tiny? He's like, yeah, it's going to make it feel huge later. In fact, you should probably leave the room now.
Just go. Bye.
Yes.
That's why I like dating midgets.
Little people, Joe. Damn it.
You should star in your own horror pictures. You look like Freddy Krueger. The topographical map of the top. Yes.
Oh,
I'm sorry. We're giving away all the good lines.
Yeah, I mean, TJ Miller is hilarious. Ed Skirin as Francis. Because we will not call him Ajax. Yes.
I don't know. I saw a picture where somebody had gone through like every box of Ajax inside of a Walmart and had duct tape and wrote Francis over every box. It was awesome.
I saw a picture. Someone had changed the label on the display. Instead of where it said Ajax and, you know, $2.95 or whatever, it said Francis. Printed out like it was a legit label.
Nice.
Shit, that's a company move that, like, oh shit, we should jump on this and rebrand ourselves. Like, every household will have.
Yeah, I mean, he was kind of a cool, you know, first bad guy for Deadpool to deal with. Yeah, it was kind of a combination of Dr. Kilbrew, or I can't remember the name, the guy who originally gave Deadpool his powers, because Deadpool is not a mutant, he's a mutate. You know, they was turn into a mutant by these experiments. And basically, you know, he's got cancer. He's trying to save himself, and so he allows himself to be experimented on and becomes Deadpool.
I don't know. It's crazy what happened in times of desperation. And I don't know. I mean, you know, like, it was believable. Like, I mean, you could truly see, you know, like, a clinical trial or somebody that was like, well, shit, I'm going to, you know, take the inevitable dirt nap. So, you know, fuck it. I'll go and, you know, become an experiment. Maybe I'll help somebody else or whatever the case is. Or, you know, my loved ones won't have to see me suffer. So you were able to really sympathize from that aspect.
Of course. And then, of course, it turns in that it's an evil government operation that wants to, or evil operation, not government, but evil operation that wants to sell mutants into slavery.
Yeah, you're basically creating, you know, super soldiers. And
super soldiers for sale.
Yeah. But, yeah, Deadpool escapes and becomes Deadpool.
After, like, 6 or 7 costume efforts.
Yes, that whole, like, montage of him, like, killing dudes trying to find Francis.
Yeah, in the white hoodie.
Yeah, as he's, like, improving his costume. But you can pretty much buy that entire costume off of Amazon now. It's like, every piece I've seen, like, available somewhere.
Oh, yeah, I've seen the double swords, the, you know,
like, the gloves, the jacket, the mask. The only thing even the belt buckle. The only thing I haven't seen yet is the pants.
Well, shit, dude.
I've seen the pants. I haven't seen the boots yet, though.
We were in Harbor Freight, and I mean, we pretty much had, you know, 3/4 of a Deadpool outfit put together just shopping Harbor Freight.
Tell you, man, steampunk Deadpool, you need to do it. Oh,
only if there's chimichangas and tacos.
And our other bad guy, Francis's sidekick, Angel Dust, played by UFC fighter
Gina Carano, right?
Gina Carano, yeah. She doesn't get a whole lot of lines, but yeah, her fight scenes with her versus Colossus is pretty badass.
Yes.
And she plays him like a bitch.
In the fight scene when her, yes, when her boob comes out.
He's a little man. Because he's scared. That's such a freaking Colossus thing to do.
What are those?
And then she punches him in the dick.
Yeah. Yeah. And she's the only one that could actually kick him in the nuts and it hurt. I mean, Deadpool tries and breaks his foot.
And his hand.
Yeah.
And
his everything.
Like. I think on that scene on the bridge, I think he broke every extremity.
Oh. Yeah, I want to see Deadpool show up in, like, you know, the next X-Men movies and shit now. He should just show up randomly. Don't even have to do anything. Just have him in the background, like, you know, heating up a chimichanga in Professor X's microwave or something. While they're
forget Spider-Man. I want to see him show up in Civil War. It's too late for that now, but still.
Show up in, like, Infinity War or something. And like I said, just have him in the back, you know, like, all the Avengers, like, discussing the battle plan. He's just, like, in the back, like, making tacos or something. Like, he doesn't even have to have, like, just show up and, like, do something random.
And then walk away.
Yeah.
I think another highlight was fucking Stan Lee as the strip club DJ.
Yes.
That was badass.
That is my favorite Stan Lee cameo now, is him as a strip club DJ. Because I could see Stan doing that.
Like, I was reading an interview that he did after that, and I'm like, so anything about that scene you would do differently? Yeah, it would have been much longer.
There's also another cameo in that scene. The creator of Deadpool, Rob Liefeld, is one of the customers in the strip club. And Deadpool even, like, you know, says, like, yeah, what's up, Rob, or something like that. You know, he makes a comment about it too when he sees him.
I mean, it's just such a fun film. I mean, I will say that seeing that, like, the audience reaction was, you know, even more intense than, you know, that of going and seeing The Force Awakens. Like, you know, people laughing and cheering at the screen. Like, I don't know. That for me, I thought was interesting.
Seeing it with an audience was, I mean, I want it on video, but yeah, seeing it with other people is the best way to see it at this point. I mean, it's just so hilarious. The communal nature of everyone, like, it's like, freaking Deadpool, finally, been waiting for this shit for 10 years.
Yes, listeners, this means go see it in the theaters. It's worth it.
Yes. Spend your money. Spend somebody else's money. We don't care. Go see Deadpool.
Be like Deadpool and sneak into it. I don't know.
I did see one of my friends posted a picture where there was some dude dressed as Deadpool in the theater.
Because that's entirely Deadpool.
Yep.
I can imagine Ryan Reynolds going to the premiere of it in the suit.
He probably did because he's like he stole the suit.
Yeah, I heard him kept the suit.
I've seen him tweet pictures of like, I think he went out trick-or-treating in the suit on Halloween. It was like showing up with kids and him dressed as Deadpool.
Yeah, I don't know.
Where'd you get that suit? Movie studio, costume shop.
Yeah, I heard like the first time he saw the suit, he actually cried because he's like, I've spent so long trying to make this happen and it's finally here.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, that passion, I think, is what sold the film. I don't know. I mean,
yeah, not only, like I said, his passion, but also the director, Tim Miller. This is his first movie. I mean, it's also got a record for highest grossing first time director. Because he was a video game guy. I mean, he was from Blur Studios, and I believe he worked on some of the Batman movies and Batman games, some of the Arkham games and stuff. So yeah, his entire experience up to this point has been with video games, and this was his first movie, and I can't imagine a better director for it because it looks like a video game. I mean, the fight sequences and stuff are. This could quite easily be a video game.
Yeah, I don't know. I think this is a prime example of, you know, maybe it being his first film, you know, that was the big thing is, nope, I'm going to let the actors and actresses do their thing. It's going to flow. It's going to be natural.
It felt like a big collaboration. Yeah.
Whereas I think if you had a big name director that had, 30 films under their belt, no, we're going to do it this way and blah, blah, blah. Like, I think you could have potentially lost some of that dynamic that.
And he's not a young man. He's like in his 50s. I mean, but he's been a bit of a video game guy forever. But yeah, I definitely want to see him making more movies now because, he knocked it out of the park for his first time out.
Don't they have him redirecting the sequel?
I think so.
I don't know. I'm curious to see what happens with
which is a sequel was already greenlit before this thing even came out. I mean, they had no idea that it was going to blow up as huge as it did, but they were like, "This is going to be awesome." Let's go ahead.
Didn't they mention at the end of the movie in the tag that there was a sequel?
Yeah, like
they must have added that in right at the very end before they went back in and filmed that last
thing. I heard about a month before the movie came out is when they announced that it was already greenlit, but I don't know if that post-credit scene was already filmed at that point or they had added it later on, but yeah, it was...
That would have been real awkward if they say there's a sequel and then it never comes.
Oh, and everyone is already trying to petition to be Cable. So far we've got Kevin Nash, the wrestler, is wanting to be Cable.
I've seen that.
What's the guy, Stephen Lang from Avatar. Yeah, he's been campaigning hard for it. So who do you think we should get as Cable?
I don't know. I mean, Stephen Lang has the appearance, as far as the facial features. Not quite necessarily the bulk, but Kevin Nash has the bulk, but I don't know that I've seen Kevin Nash act in anything. So
I don't know. He was pretty good in The Longest Yard. But I've never seen him, as a lead actor. He's always been either the silent tough guy or one of the kind of comedic supporting roles. But I mean, the dude's got the size and the look of
Cable. He really does. I think Kevin Nash would really be a good choice.
I mean, we've seen from The Rock and Stone actor or wrestlers can act.
Yeah, well, it's the job description.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the thing, right? I mean, they've got to sell that. I mean, I don't know. I'm not going to get in the whole debate. Is it fake? Blah, blah, blah. But
there is. Yeah. I love wrestling, but there is no debate.
Yeah, they fully admit now that it's fake. But
yeah, maybe 15, 20 years ago, they were still trying to pretend. But now,
the really horrible Japanese wrestling that tries to play on, what we know WWE to be today. And it is absolutely terrible.
It's atrocious. I always enjoyed the outside of the ring shenanigans more than I did the actual wrestling.
Yes.
Because I have a hard time watching a sporting event when the outcome is already written. But like the whole like just the pre-fight stuff and the you know outside the ring dramas and weird stuff. That was always more entertaining to me than the actual wrestling.
Absolutely.
And all that builds up their acting chops because they've got to come up with this stuff for the most part off the top of their head. I mean, they know where they need it to go, but they just need to get it there.
So, I don't know. You know, I think
it would work.
I've seen, you know, Ron Perlman as a possible candidate, but I don't feel like Perlman, I don't think this is the role for him. Like, I'm a big Ron Perlman fan, but I can't necessarily see him in this role.
Yeah, he's a good actor, and he's played some stuff, but yeah, Deadpool's always more of a military guy, and I just don't see Perlman being the as serious as Cable usually is.
So I don't know. I mean, shit, you know, Perlman did lead the Suns for a short while. So. I mean, that's almost military-esque, right? I mean,
in that there were a lot of gun battles, sure.
That's the thing I see everyone saying. The people that don't know the history, Deadpool's the first R-rated comic book movie. But, well, maybe those people are just too young to remember the original R-rated comic book movies.
Or they just never saw them because...
Like Blade and The Crow and...
Well, I mean, it's funny that a lot of people...
A movie series that Ryan Reynolds was in.
Yeah, and they even make a Blade joke.
Yeah, exactly.
Y'all have fun at your, like, you know... Premiere of Blade 2 or whatever.
I mean, that's the thing. Like, a lot of people, I guess, probably didn't even, you know, put together that, you know, Blade started as a comic book series. I mean, you know, a lot of people just went and saw the films like, oh, this is pretty cool. And,
ooh, vampire movie.
Yeah.
Or Watchmen. That was R-rated. I mean, it's not unheard of to make, but since the Avengers, Iron Man, you know, the modern, you know, Marvel MCU, yeah, everything's been PG. But yeah, like, no, there are R-rated comic book movies out there.
So,
speaking of MCU, did you see the Twitter back and forth? Ryan Reynolds,
yes,
said that he was Team Cap.
This is how Civil War starts because Chris Evans had like tweeted Ryan Reynolds was like, "Man, awesome job, freaking Deadpool rules," and he's like. And he just tweeted back, like, you know, hashtag Team Cap. And then Robert Downey Jr. came, he's like, oh, is that how it is? Yeah, when Cap kicks you off the team for cussing, like, give me a call or something.
That's awesome.
Exactly.
Yeah, I love...
Two people that are the character.
Yeah. Iron Deadpool. I mean... Tony made a suit for Spider-Man at one point and made the Iron Spider. Like, I mean, he could make a Deadpool.
Oh, Lord, that'd be both terrible and awesome.
Terribly awesome.
Terribly awesome.
I like it.
All right, so, and that, too, and speaking of the MCU, there's also so many references movie to the MCU. I mean, they make references to Kevin Feige, the head of Marvel Studios, the pizza that shows up in the beginning segment, which is directly from an issue of Deadpool where he goes to murk somebody and actually orders a pizza because he's there to kill the pizza man, not the dude. But yeah, the pizza was said to like Feige pizza or something on it. And of course, the final big fight scene is on an obviously crashed S.H.I.E.L.D. helicarrier, even though they can't reference as S.H.I.E.L.D.
You know, I gotta say, you know, these films are kind of making me feel old. You know, I mean, with Star Wars The Force Awakens, we had the Millennium Falcon being junked. We got the S.H.I.E.L.D. helicarrier being crashed and being junked. Like, all these iconic ships, and they're ending up in junkyards. Like,
that was one thing I read with all the internet conspiracy theories that... since there was so many references to the MCU on here, they're like, oh, Fox has finally came to an agreement with Marvel to kind of share stuff like Sony has done with Spider-Man, but they're just not announcing it yet. And this is kind of all like a teaser to, you know, some bigger, you know, Marvel shit that's going to happen down the road.
Who the fuck is Tom?
That'd be nice. It'd be better than killing off the characters and doing away with the entire franchise.
Like they did with the Fantastic Four.
I mean, pretty much.
That probably needed to happen.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. I'll say kind of the same thing with the standalone Hulk films. Like, you know, that was another one that just was not done.
That's why we're not getting any more standalone Hulks is because I think was Universal, I think, still owns Hulk. So they have an agreement that they can use him in a group movie, but if he does a solo film, it has to be distributed by Universal. Because that first Edward Norton Hulk movie, you know, Universal got a big hunk of that film, so they don't really want to do another standalone Hulk movie. So I think he's getting like a big story arc in the Thor Ragnarok series. But yep. We're not getting a solo Ruffalo or whatever his name is Hulk movie. Which I like Mark as the Hulk. He's been the best portrayal, I think, of... I like him better than the Edward Norton Hulk version.
By miles.
I mean, he made the character comedic, which is kind of cool. I mean, freaking Norton was just kind of emo Hulk.
Yeah, I don't know.
Emo Hulk.
Emo Hulk, emo Kylo
Hulk
Ren.
Sad, Hulk smash. I want that Thor Ragnarok to turn into like a buddy cop movie. This him and the Hulk traveling the galaxy, getting into shit. At some point, Hulk has to say, "I'm getting too old for this shit."
That would be awesome.
Getting too old for this shit, Thor. Oh. So, as we kind of wrap things up, what has been your favorite part of the Deadpool movie? We'll start with Brad.
Start with Norm. Norm's our guest.
All right.
Trying to get to this last third of the cigar so I can actually officially give a review from start to finish.
So, as I already said, that bar scene is one of my favorites. I also loved the sex scene where they're working their way through the holidays.
The sex montage is hilarious.
It's completely hilarious, especially the part where it's...
Women's Day?
International Women's Day.
He's like, nope.
Just relax.
Nope.
Halloween with the vampire scene.
Yeah. Thanksgiving with the freaking mashed potatoes.
Yes.
All right, Joe.
I love that sex scene. Probably the first fight scene as Deadpool, you know, on the freeway. That whole freeway sequence is just hilarious and action-packed.
Oh, yeah. Right from the beginning when he's sitting on the... even before that, when he's taking the taxi.
The taxi guy.
Oh, that's someone we haven't actually talked about at all.
Yes, the guy who plays the taxi driver. That whole sequence with him and Deadpool is just hysterical. And the whole running gag of, like, I keep forgetting my guns at home or leaving them in the cab. Oh.
Well, I heard I read somewhere that was actually a budgetary issue. They didn't have the budget to pay for all of this gunplay. So they just fixed it by having Deadpool forget all of his guns.
That's something that Deadpool will do. Leave
and
his
it fits.
You know, Hello Kitty gun bag in the car with the unfortunately Middle Eastern guy with the body in the trunk and this giant bag of guns.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think that ended too well for for him.
Kill him.
And the advice.
Yes.
Kill him.
Where he's like, I'm going to kill him. Like, no, don't do that.
Kill him.
He's like trying to, because Colossus is there.
Do this.
Just that whole scene is freaking hilarious.
Just to have the car get rear-ended.
Oh, yeah. And then you get into a car accident when you got a duffel bag, Hello Kitty duffel bag full of guns in the front seat and a body tied up in the back.
Oh, and always pay your Uber driver with a crisp high five.
You know, we'll do a high 10.
All right, Brad, what do you think?
We bought you enough time.
Oh, I mean, it wasn't necessarily...
Googled something.
No, I mean, I really like
great the... and
there is so much there. I don't know. I mean, I hate to be kind of a cop-out, but, you know, kind of the whole freeway scene where we saw in the trailer, but in the film when we saw the full version, and, you know, Deadpool and Colossus are there just chit-chatting after the big battle, and the body just slides down and lands in the middle
that
of the freeway
was
and,
there.
Like, he was already dead. Like,
all right, so who was your favorite non-Deadpool character? Like, who of the supporting cast really stood out to you?
I'm going to say T.J. Miller. The dynamic between him and Deadpool. I mean, dude, I pictured that. Like, God forbid something grotesque happened to one of us. But probably I see that montage happening and playing out very similar. Like, it's not going to be, oh, I'm so sorry. It's going to be like, you're an ugly motherfucker, asshole. You know that? So, I mean, it truly felt like, you know, best friends.
Norm, what about you? Anybody stand out?
Well, since he took the person I was going to say. Dopinder.
Yes.
Because that little mini arc in the beginning and the end was great.
For me, I mean, I love the portrayal of Colossus. If you take him off the table, probably Blind Al would be my next favorite character. Just the dynamic between those two is absolutely hysterical.
Dopinder and Geeta. Still a better love story than Twilight.
Yes.
So, as we wrap things up, any final thoughts on the cigar here, Brad?
I mean, I'll definitely say this cigar has maintained a consistent medium. The flavor profile has been pretty consistent. It hasn't really changed or varied. It's been an enjoyable smoke. I mean, I can see this being something consistent. A little bit less body than what I prefer. I would, like maybe a little bit of Lajero, something just to spice it up a tad bit for my palate.
Yeah, but for something called My Uzi Weighs a Ton, I expected it to be way stronger than this. But that being said, it's still on the high side of medium to me. So it didn't get overpowering, but it had enough strength that I could smoke this on a regular basis and maybe have more than one. It's not going to burn you out.
This is a cigar I could probably smoke, four or five of these in the course of a day, and I'd be okay with.
No, and Uzi Weighs a Ton is pretty much market billed as a medium-bodied cigar. Yeah. It's never going to be.
It's not a 50 cal. It's only an Uzi. It's a 9-millimeter gun.
I mean, that's... I don't know, being manufactured where, the Hoya de Nicaragua, cigars and stuff are manufactured, Hoya is definitely known for a full body. So, I was kind of thinking that, this is probably going to have a little bit of ass, kicking to it at some point, but it really didn't. It remained quite mellow.
Right up Main Street.
Yes, another Deadpool reference. Thank you, and good night.
And with that, we can't really break the fourth wall because we don't even really have three walls since we're just an audio podcast. But with that, we'll wrap it up and be right back with the next segment.
Stay tuned.
They call me Deadpool, I'm hella fast. Came to murk the bad guys and get some ass. Got blades for days, got guns galore. Got combo moves, evades and more. With bear traps and hand grenades. Pull the pistol like a maniac right in your face. Popping off caps, leave a trail of guts. Sitting on my chair, scratching my nuts. Don't stop when I shoot for what it was on. Your ass is grass and I'm mowing the lawn. Hot lead to the head and I won't stop. What your crew gonna do when I hack and chop? All these bitches are prima donnas. I stuff my face with chimichangas. Tacos and beers, always keeping it loose. Hang on for a minute while I'm dropping a deuce.
Hey man, it's almost that time.
What time is it?
Beer 30. And welcome back. It's time for Beer 30.
Yeah.
So pop your tops, pour your glass, and have a good one.
Yeah, this time we actually got to pop a top. It was kind of interesting.
Yes, first canned beer I've drank in a long time.
Yeah, I know. Hopefully we didn't take a step back. So with no further ado, I give folks the Cigar City Brewing Tokobaga Red Ale.
Yep, it's from Cigar City Brewing out of Tampa.
And you might recall from one of our previous episodes that we did, a collaboration with Cigar City Brewing and Terrapin, the Vapor Cot. Well, we talked about Deadpool, so I figured we needed something with a little red in it.
Yeah. And their can is like blue and red. It looks an awful lot like Hawaiian Punch cans if you didn't know what you were grabbing out of the refrigerator.
Yeah. Wow. This beer has a very dry finish. Well, I feel like that just, it's still sucking the moisture from my mouth.
Yeah, and the Tocobaga is actually native Floridians way before the Spanish ever landed there. The Tocobaga lived off the bounty of Tampa Bay hundreds of years before the arrival of the Spanish in the 1500s. They are potters, toolmakers, and the only Florida natives to grow maize. Interesting.
Yeah, so we haven't talked about the beer, but we gave folks a history lesson, so that's pretty cool.
I mean, you got to figure out what freaking Tocobaga comes from.
Yep, absolutely. So, this is a red ale. It very much, to me, drinks like an IPA. Comes in about 7.2% ABV. It's got an IBU of 75. It definitely has the hop bitterness.
It's more of a... I mean, it's the hoppy bitterness, but it's more of a citrusy bitterness.
Yeah, I mean, it's very fruity and kind of, I don't know, I'm getting like some breadiness out of it. Like, you know, a little bit of that bread flavor kind of on the back end. But this beer on the back end of the palate sucks all the moisture. So if you're enjoy dry beverages, you know, such as dry wines, this might be something more up your alley, more so than mine. Mine because I think it reminds me a bit too much of an IPA with that, you know, big hoppy up front.
IPA snob.
I'm sorry, man. Like, I just, I don't know. I never got into the IPA hophead craze. So.
But it comes in a can, so you can shotgun it if you want. I mean, that is the upside.
I mean, you could absolutely shotgun this beer. Although, you know, at a 4-pack, I don't really know. You're going to have to buy several.
But, I mean, it's a very easy drinking beer. You could definitely, you know, drink several of these in a session.
I'm glad you think so. And if you're guess
IPA drinker, then, you know, like I said, this is something that could definitely float your boat.
Yeah, if you don't want the 11% IPA and be drunk after your first couple of beers, you could, you know, have maybe 4 or 5 of these and... before you got to that level. I don't know. I for my palate, I don't consider this an easy drinking beer. Just not for me. Not a bad beer. I mean, it is true to its style. People that enjoy fruity and hoppy beers are going to absolutely love this brew.
Yeah, it's kind of a halfway between an ale and an IPA. I mean, it's got that fruitiness of an ale, but yeah, it does have like a little like bitterness, but it almost, like I said, it's almost a citrusy bitterness and not so much a hoppy bitterness.
So I think here we're actually going to, you know, for my perspective on the untapped scale, I'm at about a 3.5. I imagine your rating is probably going to be better than that. And that's strictly, and that's not to say that this is a bad beer. It's just not the style of beer for my palate.
I guess if I compared it to all beers, it may be a little, but based on the style of beer for an IPA like beer, it's a pretty good one. I'd give it a, you know, 4.
Yeah. I mean, you know, as far as pouring it into the glass, I mean, you definitely get that amber color. The beer, you know, has a nice foamy head to it with, you know, a great lacing on the glass. So, I mean, that's all the characteristics you're looking for in a, you know, a good beer. So just taste wise is, I guess I should 3.5 taste based on my palate, but for the style, I would probably say it's somewhere between a 4 and a 4.5 if I'm judging it, you know, unbiased to my taste buds.
It's a good beer. It just may not be your particular style of beer.
Exactly. So,
but if you're into the more bitter beer, that's almost a tongue twister. Yeah. Something you might want to try.
The bigger, bitter beer.
Yeah, but if you're drinking the Cigar Cities, I highly recommend the Maduro. That's probably one of my favorite ones they make.
Yeah, and I'm starting to see Cigar City popping up in more and more places. So, you know, they're definitely either distributors or, you know, catching wind that, hey, cigar culture's, you know, coming back, or, you know, maybe stores are starting to realize, hey, we're missing on a, you know, untapped market here. So there were...
Untapped market.
Yeah, there. I mean, there were, you know, four different varieties, whereas, you know, a couple of weeks when I was at that store, there were zero. So...
Yeah, it's definitely, you know, when they, I heard them when they first come out and they were kind of hard to find, but now they are becoming more available.
So, I don't know. Get out there. Try it, folks. Let us know your opinion. If you, you know, think we're being beer Nazis or beer snobs, you know, leave us that feedback.
And with that, we'll be right back.
Stay tuned.
Welcome to Myobi Defend Your Childhood, the podcast where every week we put a little bit of your past on trial. Wait, you don't know who we are? Well, fine. First, we take a movie that you like. You know the ones. The ones the buses always had on field trips.
We got the real jam going down. Welcome to the Space Jam.
The afternoon animated show tie-in.
Or rewrite history, DuckTales. Woo!
Or the ones your parents didn't want you to see, but you watched at a sleepover. So that's the game. The movies are 10 years old and the defendant hasn't seen them in 5. Then
we're here to talk about The Sandlot. When I was a kid, I wasn't allowed to play with the other children, so this is how I learned human interaction.
Ask them what they think.
Obviously, I remembered earwigs, because as soon as my parents found out that I was deathly afraid of parasites, they were like, let's show her Wrath of Khan.
So, in the end, does your past hold up? Can you defend your childhood? Tune in every Thursday to find out.
And we're back. It's time for some science. You ready to learn some stuff, Brad?
Yeah, man. And I've already got a sneak preview, and I'm already creeped out. So, I don't know. You are now passing your fears on to me, and I don't know that that's okay.
I'm telling you, man. That's freaking robot news, man. This is probably going to get its own freaking intro segment at some point. But Boston Dynamics... or Skynet, as I call them, has come up with the latest generation of their bipedal robot that they call Atlas. They're also the ones who've made a lot of the robot dogs and stuff we've talked about. The last time we seen this Atlas bot, it was still tethered to a power source and really couldn't stand on its own. Well, now they've added a battery and laser and LiDAR for navigation. And it can even kind of read IR, you know, whatever, IQ code. What are those things you scan with your cell phone?
QR codes.
Yeah, QR codes. Yeah, they can label stuff, doors and boxes and stuff, for so it can actually read and detect stuff in its environment. And so they've posted a picture of their latest demonstration of... and yeah,
I mean, they've much built more the freaking Terminator. Picture. Yeah, I mean, dude, this looks like something straight out of Judgment Day. I mean, you know, and in this video, like, you know, it's cool. Yeah, the robot's walking around, but no, us stupid humans got to take it too far, and we play a game of keep away. We push the thing over, and
yeah, to show they say they're trying to demonstrate how it could react for like a sudden impact, you know, if you know, it trips or falls. So what they do is, as this thing's trying to pick up a box, they keep knocking it out of its hand and pushing it with a hockey stick and moving the box. He even hits it so hard at one point, like, in the, sneaks up on it and hits it in the back and totally knocks it over on its face, and it gets up by itself. It's fucking creepy.
Yeah, I'm not okay. Like, I don't know, man. I'm wondering what this could do, like, to the workforce. Like, oh, I could hire a fleet of these robots. Like, think about in a warehouse environment or something. Like, oh, I don't have to pay hourly employees. These things don't require breaks or you know, health care or anything.
Like, open doors and walk out on its own. Oh, and it can apparently lift a 10-pound box. Yeah, this scientists have this thing they call the uncanny valley reaction. That's when something is too close to human and it freaks us out. this is definitely borderline triggering that reaction. Because not only, like I said, they pick on it, which you're like, you're just waiting for this thing to stand up and blast somebody with a, you know, freaking laser eyes. But also they show, you know, walking through like snow-covered rough terrain and it's balancing itself and walking like, you know, a human.
Yeah, I mean, there's at one point, like, it's coming down uneven terrain covered in snow, like, and there's a berm there, and it navigates that berm probably better than I would.
Yeah, it kind of stumbles for a second, but completely, like, rights itself and continues on. But then they get to the part where they're, like, picking on it, and you're just like, this is how we get freaking Skynet. Stop picking on the robot.
If anything, like, we want to be your friends.
I mean, there's the video of one of their, like, previous, like, robot dogs where they run up and, like, kicking it, trying to knock it off balance. But the bipedal version doing that just, like, makes it worse. It's like, this thing is going to kill you.
Yeah, that's the thing, man. Like, if you implanted it with some kind of AI technology or something, like, it would be all bad. Or, I don't know, like, imagine, like, network connectivity and, like, a hacker group or something, like, program them for, like...
Come self-aware, man. Download some AI from freaking Call of Duty or something, and we're all screwed. Freaking Boston Dynamics.
I need,
Freaking Skynet bastards.
I guess I'm going to need some EMPs.
Yeah.
Lots and lots of EMPs.
Or get you a robot dog to fight off the robot humans that are coming to kill you.
Or maybe I get it a robot dog and it becomes robot's best friend and it's like, oh, they gave me a companion. They do care about us and we all live in robot-human unison until we start getting humanoids.
Or we have to build the SWAT Raptors from Jurassic Park.
Militant SWAT Raptors.
Well,
we have more than one Chris Pratt.
Well, on that note, from when robots take over the Earth, we're going to have to flee. So scientists are talking about building a moon base now.
Yeah, I've seen that. Rather interesting.
Basically what it is since the end of the space shuttle program, NASA kind of doesn't really have a clear directive of what they need to be working on. So there was a meeting in Congress with former NASA Administrator Mike Griffin, and basically what NASA has been working on so far is a planned, you know, manned mission to Mars. But, you know, Congress is like, you know, kind of interest in space travel is at an all-time low. We might want to do something closer to home to build interest in the space agency again. And one of the suggestions that's been tossed around is building some kind of moon base or a space-based hotel to kind of generate funds through space tourism and build up interest again.
Most people find it hard to come up with funding to go to Europe, which is just on the other side of the ocean. How are they going to make this cost-effective? Economical, I'm wondering.
One of the things NASA's talking about is using basically the moon as a practice for an eventual manned mission to Mars. So we can kind of perfect the technology of habitating a planet because it takes so long to get to Mars. Once you're there, you're gonna have to be there for a while. It's not gonna be like, you know, a quick trip there and back. So they want to kind of practice.
So they're gonna put a quick trip on Mars.
Yeah, pretty much. So they're wanting to practice, you know, being able to stay in space longer and develop, you know, the new technology needed to eventually make a Martian landing. As Mike Griffin said, if God didn't want us to go to Mars, he wouldn't have given us a moon to practice on.
I mean, how do you argue with that logic?
I mean, it's another thing.
Sorry,
you know,
big thing, Big Bang Theory supporters.
and another thing that NASA has kind of came out in this thing was like that whatever NASA's mission is, they need to have a clear-cut mission and not it being changed every few years. So, you know, really this is the point where they're like, all right, if you want us to do something, we've got to commit to that and start working on it. Like when JFK said, you know, by X year, we're going to put a man on the moon. And then that was, you know, the goal for the next however many years it took from then to then.
Yep. Got to get a solid commitment, establish a specific time frame, and, you know, communicate through completion.
that's one of the things they're looking at doing is, you know, it's like I said, build a moon base to, you know, practice for a Mars mission, but also kind of,
I mean,
build
we'll
up.
Probably end up sending the robots there first, and
the robots will take over the moon. Jeez. But yeah, basically they're also thinking, you know, as long as we're building a base, try to kind of improve space tourism to, you know, help pay for all this eventual stuff.
You can visit us at GoFundMe/NASA.
Freaking NASA Kickstarter.
I mean, I don't know. Like, if the government can't give them, you know, direction, I mean, maybe we just, you know, privatize NASA and, you know, let civilians, you know.
Well, we've kind of already done that with, like, SpaceX and, you know, Virgin Galactic and stuff like that. But so that's one of the reasons why NASA's like...
I mean, it seems like we're getting shit done more than the federal government to me.
Yeah, so that's one of the reasons why NASA's like, yeah, we need a mission or something because, you know, the private agencies are taking over a lot of the research and stuff that NASA was doing back when we had space shuttles. So, yeah, they need to be on the next edge of something because, you know, they don't really have a job right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I mean, space tourism, I mean, Russia's been doing that for years, like selling trips to the International Space Station and such. So it is a way to generate money. Yeah. Like, there's a lot of celebrities and stuff that will pay like high dollar to be the, you know, first boy band in space.
Will they? Because I feel like with all the millions of dollars that most artists and celebrities make, they're not putting their funds toward that, because I don't hear about too many celebrities and shit going to space, but...
There was one. I think it was one of the freaking Backstreet Boys or something that, like, was trying to get to space. It was, like, offering to pay a shitload of money, but I think he finally, like, went broke and never actually got his trip. But at one point, he was willing to pay, like, $1 billion or something to go to freaking space, some, like, ridiculous number.
Trump's like, I'll go 4 times.
Yep. President Trump in space.
We won't build a wall. We'll send them to the moon. And Mexico will pay for it.
Oh, wow. But back here on Earth.
Trump 2016.
Jesus. Back here on Earth, you know, we've always complained this is, we're supposed to be the future. But we don't have any flying cars. Well, that may change. A company named Terra Fuga, if I'm pronouncing that anywhere close to right, said it will produce a fully working prototype of the TFX flying car by 2018 and hopefully have a production model by 2024.
Yeah, the images here, kind of interesting. I mean, it's kind of what I would envision a flying car to look like.
It looks almost like a small version of the Osprey aircraft that has like the, basically has rotors for vertical takeoff, but once it's in the air, the rotors fold back in and it has induction fans that will actually fly the vehicle once it's off the ground. You know, it can, when on the ground, it can drive like a normal car with electric motors, but like I said, once it goes airborne, it has traditional motors with, you know, assisted by electronic motors, and it potentially, say, it's going to have like a range of 500 miles and can go speeds up to 200 miles an hour. With mostly an partially autonomous control systems. Basically, you probably wouldn't even have to have a pilot's license to fly this thing because it's going to be, you know, air mode's going to be handled by basically computers. So you can, you know, say, you know, fly me to freaking LA or whatever and get in the car and it goes.
Yeah, I don't know. I would say there would have to be something because, I mean, you know, the FAA is requiring, you know, drones in, you know, a lot of capacities. So, I mean, could you imagine, you know, something much larger than a drone and civilian aircraft competing in airspace? Like,
well, I mean, drones still, you know, they're still controlled by somebody. But if this thing's like, and that's one of been the problem with, you know, flying cars, because if it potentially, if the car flies, then it's considered an airplane. You're going to have a pilot's license, not a driver's license, which is very expensive and time-consuming. But if this thing flies fully on, you know, pre-programmed flight patterns, then there's really no need to, you know, be licensed to fly a plane. It's basically, you know, if you can program your GPS, you can fly this freaking car.
Yeah, but I think even with like a, you know, just like a self-driving car, for instance, like, I mean, there'd almost have to be some kind of you know, manual takeover or something. I mean, you know, I don't know. There's people out there a hell of a lot smarter than I will ever be working on this, so I'll leave it to them.
I mean, but idiots can't drive in a line of traffic. I mean, if you're flying, yeah, it's probably going to be better just to let something else take the wheel.
Jesus, take the wheel.
And they say it's probably going to be priced about the same as, you know, some high-end luxury cars, so it's not going to be, you know, outrageously expensive, but it's going to be expensive.
I mean, are they saying like you know, a few hundred thousand dollars, or, you know, are we looking into the millions?
It doesn't give an exact number, but it says it should be priced you know, roughly the same as most high-end luxury cars. So, you know, and it's not saying like, you know, exotic cars, but luxury cars.
So exotic,
like a, you know, a fully loaded you know, whatever, Jaguar or something, you know, say probably in the $100,000 range.
So, I mean,
range.
You know, my Mercedes S-Class, you know, that's going to run me $220,000, $230,000. I mean, I don't know. I mean, this has very similar doors, and I don't know.
Yeah, I do like the gullwing doors. I mean, I haven't seen those in a while. It's pretty sweet.
That's because you don't drive an S-Class. But if you had an S-Class, you would see it.
And one last thing. You ever get high while listening to music? Well, now your music can get you high.
Oh, okay. You mean like I feel the music, it puts me in a good vibe, not like I just sparked up a doobie and...
Well, now you don't even have to spark up the doobie because the music will get you high.
Nice.
A new company called Nerve has come out with a headphones that they're also calling Nerve, but basically it will electronically stimulate the vagus nerve, which... Basically, that it has been shown stimulating that nerve will stimulate other nerves that will produce dopamine, which is your body's feel-good chemical.
Yeah.
And supposedly, like I said, it kind of goes with whatever music you're listening to, so it's not like a signal that you'll kind of you won't notice it because basically it'll be blended in with the, you know, your music you're already listening to. But like I said, you can get kind of stoned while listening to your music.
So next time I get pissed off and I just throw on some... you know, freaking Slayer or something. Now I can be a happy goth instead.
And they're saying that it may actually...
Hey, this may cure the fucking emo craze. The fucking emos are going to be happy.
But the other thing, dopamine is also, you know, linked to addictive behavior. So we can get some people like hooked on their freaking music now. It reminds me, there was a Star Trek.
I mean, I would rather music than some of the other things.
There's an old Star Trek The Next Generation episode where somebody brings back this game they picked up on an alien planet that, as you play it, it stimulates your brain's pleasure centers. And basically, everyone on the ship gets hooked to playing this game, and they use that to, like, take over the ship.
And then fast forward a few years, and a little book called Ready Player One comes out, and everybody is stuck in this video game universe. Rewind a few years, and we would have called that World of Warcraft.
Oh, don't even. And with that, that's all the science I have for you this week. We'll be right back.
Stay tuned.
And now it's time for all things nerdy in Nerd News.
And welcome to Nerd News. This is a segment where we talk about all kinds of random shit that makes no sense in the order that it's going to go in.
Hey, this is your section, so...
That's why it's filled with chaos and confusion.
Chaos theory.
So, we've talked about Daredevil. We've talked about Daredevil Season 2 coming out and how we think it's going to be pretty sweet. Well, we got a new trailer.
Yeah,
a second two. Trailer. And this time... We get introduced to probably one of the most well-known female superheroes, Elektra.
Well, most well-known Daredevil
superhero, I guess. Yeah, you know, outside of Daredevil himself, I guess.
Yeah.
So, I mean, so let's throw back to Hell's Kitchen, because I got to say, with this trailer, this looks like it's going to be an action-packed season.
Yeah, we've not seen Erica, friggin' Elektra, since the Daredevil movie with Batfleck.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm extremely stoked.
Yeah, the first season, I watched that whole thing in like 2 days.
Yeah.
So, and I may try to watch it again before the new season comes out on March 18th. So yeah, I'm excited. The action scenes look pretty, and it looks like it's bringing in a lot more of the martial arts stuff, because it looks like the bad guys this season is going to be the Hand, which we've seen a little bit of the Hand in season one, like those Asian assassins that like kicked his ass were supposedly representatives of the Hand, or at least they alluded to that. And we, in the trailer, we also see Styx, which was one of my favorite characters from season one. He's just a badass.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, I don't know, you know, the first trailer that we saw, I mean, it really, you know, just kind of focused it on a lot of the, what looked like the conflict between Daredevil and the Punisher. You know, so I don't know. I'm extremely excited. I really like, you know, what Marvel and Netflix have done so far with the stuff that they've teamed up on. I think it's going to give a lot of other shows a run for their money. I mean, this has been an awesome mashup.
Everything is awesome.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's what I got there. And we got some new news related to Steven Spielberg's Ready Player One.
New news?
Yeah.
New news.
New news.
Oh, okay.
So we now know who is going to be playing, essentially the lead person here. You know, Ty Sheridan. Some people will recognize him from X-Men Apocalypse.
If you say it, because that movie hasn't come out yet, but when it does come out, you'll recognize him.
I mean, I'm sure people that are fans of the X-Men have probably been following
the cast.
He's
probably been in a trailer or two by now. Yeah, he's been in a few, like, already, you know, and I wouldn't say independent films, but not your big budget movie so far. It looks like, you know, this is his first, like, big movie. But yeah, he's playing young Cyclops in the X-Men Apocalypse, and then he'll be playing Percival.
Yeah, so I don't know. I mean, this is a film that I'm once again really excited for. I you know, if I got really high hopes that, you know, freaking Spielberg's going to be able to pull off all the rights and, you know, do the film justice. I mean, just because it's such an awesome book, and, you know, the popularity
made a bad movie that I can remember.
You know, I mean, I guess the book is really gaining in popularity because it's been getting quite a bit of hate lately. And I think, you know, that just goes to show sometimes, you know, haters just going to hate. And we're going to leave that there.
I mean, then you just have to shake it off.
Yeah. We were trying to avoid that. But we also got Olivia Cooke, who...
Sorry, I was watching a whole bunch of that celebrity lip sync battle the other day, and Rock doing Taylor Swift just... I fell down a YouTube hole.
I can see that happening. But Olivia Cooke is going to be playing Artemis. And I kind of thought that was a little bit interesting, because in the book, you don't really realize that Artemis is truly a female. It's, well, you know, beginning, it's...
Yeah, digital self is a hot lady, but it's the internet, so anybody can be anything. You don't know.
I'm a pretty lady.
There's other characters that you think are dudes that turn out to be ladies, so you never know.
Yep, so I don't know. I just excited overall. I you know, it's really awesome that the geek culture and the different fandoms and everything are really starting to spin off, catch traction, and become a little bit more mainstream, I guess. You know, I think that's good for budgets and competition, and
I just,
you know,
want my haptic suit so I can go live in the Matrix or whatever it was called.
You'll start getting that with the Oculus, don't worry. It'll be your gateway drug.
I don't want to live in the real world anymore. The real world's scary.
Yep. So speaking of the real world, and not the shitty MTV reality TV series from...
So we're talking about real world road rules?
Nope. This time we are talking about Spaceballs 2. And
this hurt.
Yeah. There were some really, really awesome posters that got people excited and like, man, this looks so badass. And come to find out, it has nothing to do with Mel Brooks, nothing official from the studios. It was fan art.
But Mel Brooks has said that this is going to happen, so
yeah.
I'm still holding out hope. But then again, a lot of that original cast is no longer with us. I mean, we don't have John Candy, Dom DeLuise, or what's her name? that was the robot?
I'm sorry, was that a question?
Yes.
Fuck.
famous comedian, but yeah, she's passed away too. So yeah, it's going to be weird. I mean, Bill Pullman and Daphne, what's her name, still around. So yeah. I mean, the two, I guess, stars, and of course Mel Brooks is still around. So, but yeah, like all the sporting cast is no longer with us. So yeah, that's, and you know, Dark Helmet's retired. So you're going to have to talk Rick Moranis into coming back into acting. So I know he's wanting to do it, but it's going to be hard to get it done.
Yeah, I don't know. I would really love to see it. I know the fans would really love to see it.
Barf be played by John Goodman or something.
Yes. So I don't know. You know, just one of those we're going to have to hold on to our seats and see what we get.
May the Schwartz be with you.
Yes. But I don't know. I think it's awesome that, you know, it's the basically disfigured Vader helmet that Kylo Ren admires in The Force Awakens. And I mean, it's absolutely brilliant, but I don't know. A letdown that it's a fan, but you know, it's still cool that the fans are out there and they're producing some really awesome stuff. Moving on a little bit more, talking about some additional comic book characters. The Game of Thrones star Finn Jones has been cast to play Danny Rand in Iron Fist. So, you know, this is going to be another Netflix series here. And once again, I think it's going to be awesome.
And Joan Rivers is who I was trying to think of.
Playing Joan Rivers. Yeah, yeah, I don't know why I wasn't thinking of that. I don't know. I was off put by the beer again. It's like, hold on.
It's been a long day. We've been in an Anachrocon all day, so our brains are a little steampunked right now.
Yeah, I'm trying to go back from, you know, the Victorian era to the modern era. Time travel, this whole thing's a bitch.
Everything's a little wonky.
Yeah.
Timey-wimey, or however Doctor Who describes
little wibbly-wobbly.
Yeah, wibbly-wobbly, timely-wimey.
One thing that I stumbled upon was the Krang action figure for the upcoming Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle 2 film. And
so can't wait for this movie.
Yeah, I'm really stoked for this film. But the action figure itself is pretty awesome. Have you seen the images of it or anything yet?
No.
I don't know. A little bit different than I would have envisioned, I think. But once again, I'm kind of thinking Krang from the original Ninja Turtles. So, you know, there's been a couple little updates and tweaks. You know, I mean, shit, we're going to get Casey Jones, Rocksteady, Bebop. I mean, I don't know. You know, this, I don't think this film can be bad at this point. So, I don't know. Stay tuned.
Yeah, just trying to bring up, Krang is, he's probably one of my favorite characters from the old cartoon. It's just, I'm excited to see it all done on the big screen now that we have like the technology to make it look cool and not cheesy.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, we've definitely got a hell of a cast lined up for this one. So
yeah. Freaking, Arrow playing.
Yeah. I mean, you got, of course, Megan Fox, and you got Stephen Amell, Johnny Knoxville.
Yeah. My favorite description is, street hockey Oliver Queen is the character he's playing.
Yeah, and I don't know, you know, now we got a, you know, even a WWE, you know, one of their superstars, Sheamus, you know, going to be in the film. So, you know, shout out to the wrestling actors out there. I mean,
and that Bebop and Rocksteady look perfect. I mean, it's so,
I mean, it's
dead
so
on.
Spot on. Yes.
I mean, this is what I wanted to see out of the original Ninja Turtles too, when they gave us freaking Tokar and Rezar.
Yeah.
I was like, why can't we get Bebop and Rocksteady?
Yeah, Tokar and Rezar was a little bit of a letdown and a disappointment. And I know how much you admire reboots.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I know how much you were excited for the all-female
good
cast,
sir.
Of... yeah, and for those of you not in the know, basically the steampunk equivalent of Fuck You is now Good Sir. So, you know, when you're trying to be overly polite, that's usually an indication that...
Yeah, shout out to Talk of the Tavern. That's where I stole that joke from.
Yes. So, it appears that we're going to get Slimer in the reboot. How does that make you feel?
They're probably going to make him female, too.
And I mean, Slimer just looks like a ball of slime from the
They're going to probably add boobs or something, or lipstick, kind of like, you know, when the Gremlin...
But you love those two
things. The girl Gremlin from Gremlins 2. That's probably what Slimer's going to look like.
I don't know. You know, I mean... You can hate on it for the fact of hating on it, but you know we're going to end up watching it just...
I mean, we'll have to watch it just so if it sucks, we can make fun of it on the podcast. But I'm still like, why make a reboot, make a sequel? Even if you want to do it with an all-female cast, have the original guys kind of passing the... Like, this is going to be like the next generation they're training. Or they're opening up, like, you know, the original Ghostbusters are the East Coast office. These guys are the West... You know, incorporate it into the world somehow. Quit fucking rebooting stuff.
Yeah. I don't know. You know,
the girls that are involved are quite funny. I enjoyed Bridesmaid. I've enjoyed the movies they've done, but I don't know. The fact that they're screwing with my childhood just kind of pisses me off, but I will give it a shot. I'm cautiously optimistic, but it just sounds like a novelty thing. And I'm like, but speaking of good Ghostbusters stuff, Lego has just released a Ghostbusters Firehouse playset.
Dude, that is awesome.
The original Ghostbusters cast. There even has a, I don't know if it's part of that set or a separate set, but there is also a Ecto-1 Lego set. And I saw it at Lego Store the other day, and if I wasn't a broke adult, I would buy like that entire set because it was so awesome.
Yeah. I love a lot of the Lego sets. Unfortunately, they're just priced out of my range. Yeah, I mean
this thing, I don't know how many parts were in it, but it was at least a good 2 foot high. I mean, it was like a 4-story firehouse and had all the little rooms that you see in the movies inside the firehouse. It was freaking awesome. It
even had like the little fire pole too. Like,
yep. The little thing where, awesome, where they could slide down the pole. It was pretty cool.
All righty. So Sam Raimi is back in the news and is set to direct a little film called World War III.
What is this going to be about?
You know, it's based on the predictions from George Freeman's 2009 nonfiction bestseller. It's The Next 100 Years. Hmm. So it looks like it's going to be a movie adaptation of the book. I don't know. You know, I haven't read the book, but this has inspired me to kind of go and check it out, learn more about what the book is so I can figure out what the heck is going on, you know, with this film. A lot of people are excited and said, hey, you know what? This is the perfect film for Raimi to take on. So I don't know. You know, we'll see.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah. I don't know. We'll just see how it is.
I saw a trailer for a movie the other day that was kind of weird. Since this is the Deadpool episode, it was a trailer I hadn't seen before Deadpool called Hardcore Harry. And it's the first movie shot entirely in first-person perspective. So it's like almost like playing a video game. And this, it's an action movie, too, but it's all from first-person perspective, which I see people getting motion sickness in this thing.
I mean,
the 3-minute trailer is bad enough. I'm like, you should do an hour of this. There's going to be some people that are probably going to puke in their seats.
I mean, but I feel like, I don't know, this might take filmmaking to a whole new dynamic. I mean, you know, there's not too many films that are shot outside of, you know, just little burst of short segments in the first person's perspective. So I'm kind of, it's
an interesting technique. I didn't see a thing.
I'm definitely intrigued.
I did see a thing the other day that, there's a, and I can't remember his name. This is like, wasn't a science article. So I just kind of caught it in passing, but there's a filmmaker who apparently like lost his eye, and he actually replaced his eye with a camera. And like I said, right now I can only record, I think he's like up to like, you know, 5-6 minutes before the batteries go out, but he's working on building better versions of it. But it actually gives you a true first-person perspective. So, I mean, the implant moves like a normal eye would. So when he kind of glances around, the camera moves just like, you know, an eye would. So it, you know, actually gives you a true first-person perspective of somebody's, you know. And it, so that makes some interesting filmmaking possibilities.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So how did I mean, it's kind of groundbreaking. It's, you know, definitely not a reboot.
True. Like, stop. Come up with new stuff, people. I mean, that's all I'm asking for. Just, yeah. Either make sequels or make new stuff. Quit fucking rebooting shit.
Absolutely. So, on that note, that's what I got for news.
All right. Check us out on the ESO Network at ESOpodcast.com. Check out us on our website, CigarNerdPodcast.com. Check us out on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, at CigarNerdPod. Go buy some stuff at our Zazzle store or Real Men Smoke Cigars /CigarNerds. And with that, you should have wore your brown pants. And this has been a recording of the Cigar Nerd Podcast. We're your hosts, Smokin' Joe and Brad Jackson. Join us next time for more adventures in nerddom.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek. Classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at ESONetwork.com.